Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Emerge 9 Golf Podcast. That's McLean Sonny here in the background there. Stone, battling a fever. McLean is here. Jay is here. What's happening, gents?
Another day in paradise.
Taking grenades. Legit taking grenades. I'll get this over with. I had to go put it back in the bed. I'm drinking a little mezcal with some Topo Chico with a fresh squeezed lime. Hope you guys are doing great. Really good to be back. See you in a minute.
Last week we get chains jiggle around in his laundry, whatever the hell that was. It's always an adventure in the Boyd household there.
That's right. That's right.
I hope we can hear him on the, I hope we can hear him like cuss on the monitor.
On the baby monitor?
That'd be great. That'd be awesome. That would get in the fucking bed.
It's 2.5-year-old boy with a fever.
Jay, what are you sipping on today?
I've got this new this bourbon that the ABC guy, every time I go to this ABC store, this guy, like, he talks my ear off about these different bourbons, but this one was kind of a limited release. It's called Johnny Drum. It's a weeded bourbon. Never had it or heard of it, but it's rated pretty high. Pretty good.
Yeah. I'll try that. Never heard of it.
Yeah, I haven't either, but it's pretty good. It's rated decently high.
I like the weeded. Okay. Well, I'm not drinking tonight. Just water. I've just been battling through a little, me and a migraine the last couple of days have been fighting. So I'm just going to try to hydrate. Water's good for the body.
I feel like we can't do that segment if not all of us are drinking. I feel like we got to skip over it.
Nah, we can. It's okay.
Because then we look like the guy. I mean, I don't think I've ever had one episode where I'm not drinking bourbon. That's bad.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm okay with it, I think.
Because it makes you look good. I look like the idiot that just has to have a bourbon to do the podcast.
Yeah. So, I guess let's get into some action. We got a lot to talk about tonight. PGA Championship Valhalla has concluded, and we've been asking the question for a couple of years now. Can he do it? He did it. Xander Schauffele finally seals the deal, gets a win, gets a major, and thoroughly impressive from Xander. Obviously, he's been one of the top two or three players in the world in the last couple of years, as far as from a consistency standpoint, statistics just hasn't really, like we've been talking about, hasn't racked up those wins, and didn't let Wells Fargo bother him at all. Comes out 62 opening round and was on his way.
Yeah, it was impressive. I think the one thing that the knock on him, obviously was that he was a great player, consistent player, tee to green. He's gained a bunch of yardage this year working with Como. He's added some speed. But I think, again, the knock on him was that he just couldn't get it done. And he had one comment that I thought was really cool. It was actually Sunday morning. It was either Sunday morning or Saturday afternoon. I think one of the analysts interviewed him and said, what do you think it's going to take for you to get it done tomorrow to win your first major? And his comment was, he said, I just need to find a way to get comfortable early in the round. And I thought that was a little weird at first. When I first heard it, I was like, okay, you're never going to be comfortable. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's a major. You're going to be uncomfortable. But for him, he followed it up with, I think in years past, the game was moving too fast for me, and that made him uncomfortable. So I think it was not about, for him, not necessarily controlling his nerves or being comfortable, but controlling the pace of the round and the everything that's going on, all the movement. So for him, it was like, I just need to calm the speed of the round down, and then if I can do that, then he can get into a rhythm and play his golf. Not to say that he's not going to be nervous, and I think that's where he was going with it. Obviously, he did that and it worked. It's really cool to see, him kind of, I think that was the deciding factor, is that he just opened up and was like, this is what I need to do. Like, it's hard for a player of his caliber to admit to that, mm-hmm. you know, leading into a major. I think it's, you know, you're always protecting your confidence, like we've talked about on this podcast in the past. And it just, for him to just open up, it was less about what everybody else was going to think. It was almost like, you know, he was venting a little bit and like, let me just get this out in the open, because if I can just say it out loud, maybe I can actually do it, because it's out in the universe, right? Like, I just need to get my body comfortable with the pace of the round and the speed of the round. And like I said, he did it. It was cool to hear him say it. And then he actually went and did it. And then he got the results by winning, you know, which was really cool.
Yeah. And I was impressed, you know, obviously the front nine, he shoots 4 under, you know, pretty easy. And then he makes that just awful bogey on 10. One of the, maybe what, the second easiest hole in the golf course. And I was like, oh, that's not a good sign. Here we go. And then goes, then that hits 2 impressive iron shots on 11 and 12, goes birdie, birdie. I'm like, oh, maybe this is a different Xander.
Yeah.
Yeah, his stats are truly impressive. Mind you, we'll get into the course here in a few minutes, but looking at just his stats, which are obviously relative to the field, strokes gained off the tee 3rd, approach to the green 2nd, putting 13th, and total 1st. He gained 18 strokes versus the field in total. That's a big, big number to put up in strokes gain. Green the regulation, he's 43rd around the greens in strokes gained, but he only missed 12 greens. Number 1 in greens in regulation. 3rd in scrambling, 6th in putts in per green in regulation. Got up and down out of the bunkers 5 out of 5 times. The guy played some incredible golf. And you're right, Mike. You know, he did make that one mistake on 10, and it was really more of where he left himself than the decision necessarily. He hit a bad shot. Golf, right? Like, I can't even fault him for making the decision he made. He just hit a bad shot, left it a little bit out to the right, and put himself on a very uneven lie and some very thick grass. And it was just a tough shot from there. Outside of that, though, I mean, my God, so many great things to take away from it. I mean, I think we all understood that this was a matter of time. This is not something that surprises any of us to see him lift that trophy this weekend. A great champion. I thought that the story of him calling his dad right afterwards and having to hang up on him because he started to get emotional, you know, that hits you in the feels a little bit. You're like, hey, you know what? Good on you. You know, good on you.
That's the real people.
Real people, without question. Such a cool thing for X. I'm a big fan of his. I'd be an even bigger fan if he wasn't friends with Patrick Cantlay. Like, he would be much higher on my list. But outside of that, I mean, just so many good things to take away from him. This, for him, breaking through in majors, this could open up something for him. You know, he could go ahead and start to put together that Hall of Fame career that we all know he's capable of putting up. And I think he's obviously, in my mind, he's going to be a multi-major championship winner. I don't think this is the last one that he wins by any stretch of the imagination. My God, he's been there so many times. And I think this is, again, just a springboard for him to really get out there and have that confidence on Sundays at the U.S. Open, at the British. And then obviously next year at Augusta. And I think again at the PGA, I mean, my God, when he's on, he's one of those guys that he's a hard player to beat. When he's playing well, he's a very hard player to beat. He has a complete game. He's not mentally now, I think he's probably stronger than he's ever been. I'd look for him to play well immediately following this up.
Well, you talk about a complete game. If you look at his stats on the year so far, the PGA Tour, his worst statistic is around the green, and he's 36th.
Yeah,
no, that's a great, and that's not uncommon for the top tier players that attack some of these tough pins. And he's confident in his iron game, and he maybe short sides himself a few times and leaves himself some really tough up and downs, and he's still 36th, which is pretty good.
Well, and one of the things that, you know, gets talked about a little bit, but not as often as it should, how well the guy drives the golf ball. He's a plus 180 ball speed guy. I saw 183, 185 at times.
I saw 189 one time.
That doesn't shock me. And he's still, like this week, he was T16 and fairways hit. So when you can combine that distance with that accuracy, along with a great iron game, I mean, he was second approach to the green. How do you beat that guy, right? Like, those stats are incredible to all put together. So regardless, again, he's a great player. I think we're going to watch him grab a bunch more trophies and those major championships moving forward.
Yeah, you could see almost the celebration when the putt went in on 18 to win it. It had that almost more of a
sigh of relief.
Celebration. Like, finally, I fucking did it. Like, everyone said I couldn't do it. He was probably even questioning himself a little bit. And it was like, finally. And now that's where it's like, okay, the monkey off the back. He gets off the Monty Lee Westwood list of best player to never win a major, the most weeks in the top 10 in the world and has never won a major. And now puts his buddy Cantlay as, I think, the...
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Is Cantlay moved to the top of that list?
Among active players, yeah. I mean, Westwood and Monty are done, essentially.
Yeah, you know? but active players, I mean, he's got to move to the top. And then you go down the list. I mean, Finau would be up there.
Yeah, as far as now you're talking about like most weeks in the top 10, Monty was like 400 and something.
Yeah, I mean,
Westwood was saying, like, 300 and something.
Top players in the game that, yeah, multiple wins on the PGA Tour, like you said. I mean, you can factor all those things in.
Yeah,
I mean, top 10 in the world, you know, for how many weeks? I mean, Cantlay would be at the top, I would think. And then,
yeah, I mean, he's a little bit younger, but Victor would be up there as at least Hovland, one of the most talented guys that doesn't have a win.
I would think Victor would probably be above Tony in that category.
Yeah,
right behind Cantlay. I mean, hell, I'd put them 1A and 1B.
Yeah,
just I would too. And he's younger, obviously, but they both.
Yeah, he hasn't been doing it as long. Amount of tournaments. So.
Does Aaron get like a little bit jealous for your love of Finau? I envision you with a poster of him over your bed.
I just he's a talented guy. So I mean, I'm just looking at down the list. Like, I don't really, you know, I don't really care that much about the guy one way or the other. I'm just looking at the stats. I mean, he's a talented guy. He hits it 350 yards every time. But again, I'm going through the list. I mean, there's guys that are ahead of him, but I think he would probably be up there. I mean, in terms of top 10 finishes in his career, still not win a major, I mean, he's got to be up there. I mean, I don't know if there's a whole lot of guys ahead of him.
I don't disagree. It's just funny. I feel like your alphabet starts with F.
Yeah, maybe. Aaron, I don't think Aaron even knows who he is. Like, I don't even think she even knows.
Oh, she knows. She's definitely balanced.
She doesn't.
She sees the twinkle in your eyes when you mention his name.
Yeah. Boys, Tony said, come here, come. I beat this guy one time. But I still love him.
I guarantee my boys don't know who Tony Finau is. So funny. They don't watch golf at all. None of them do. If I have to watch it on my own in private, because they won't leave the room. They don't even watch it.
That's perfect. So, you get peace and quiet then. Nobody's talking.
I guess. But then I get ridiculed for not hanging out with the family. So
I've heard that one before.
Yeah.
How's y'all doing your pool this week?
What's that?
How's y'all doing your pool this week?
Shut up, McLean.
Not great. But I did win our E9
draft. You did win the E9. Yeah, DeChambeau and Xander on the squad. Yeah. Strong.
Yeah.
You did. Yeah, that was a tough team to beat. I hope you bet them elsewhere.
I finished second in one of our other pools by picking Xander. That helped. I did have a feeling about Xander this week. I had a feeling he was finally gonna get it done. I was a little nervous when I first heard those comments about being comfortable, and then after I listened to him over and over, I kind of realized what he was describing as comfortable. And I think that made the difference. The guys, it's just a matter of time. I mean, before he got it done.
So yeah, McLean, you alluded to it. You think this is a springboard, you know, something you hear this a lot, like a guy like, oh, it's going to springboard. The floodgates are going to open. you know. So how many majors do you think he wins in his career?
Between 4 and 6.
Whoa, that's a ton.
Yeah.
That's a lot of majors.
I honestly think the guy has minimum of 15 years left of very, very competitive golf.
How old is he, 30?
I don't think he's quite that old. Is he 30?
Yeah, I think he's 30. He's older than you think.
Yeah.
Yes, he's 30.
He was a rookie when I was like the old man leaving the Q school. The year that I got through, he got through Webb qualifying. We got through the same year. And then he only had 1 year on the Webb and then went to the PGA Tour 2015, I think, for 16, 15, 14. Yeah.
Call it four then. Call it four.
Four more or four in total?
I liked four in total. I was going to say three. 27. I thought he was 27. I think Augusta is such a good track for him. I easily see him grabbing a green jacket or potentially two, because I just think that that venue sets up so well for the way that he hits the golf ball. I truly see him playing well there and getting one or two green jackets. He may not win. I could see him winning a U.S. Open and two Masters. That would be my next three majors that he wins. I could easily see him knocking two Masters down. I just think that venue for him is so, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, wait, sorry. 1, 2, 6 top tens in the U.S. Open.
I could see him easily hanging around. He's just too good all the way through the bag. And now with the extra 10, 15 yards off the tee and him winning, finally winning a major and like getting through pushing through that mental barrier there. I think that was the biggest setback for him, or the biggest restraint, is that he did lack some confidence in terms of winning. Like, I don't know how much he's won in the past. I mean, if you go back and look through his history of golf, even amateur golf, I don't know how many golf tournaments he's won. He never was a guy who dominated any one tour. So I think he was a guy who was a great player. One of the most complete players on tour, I feel like. Just never really kind of understood what it took to win. And now he's starting to get that feeling, and especially doing it in a major. Four, five or six majors would be a lot, but you know, if you went back, you know, 6 years and said the same thing about Brooks Koepka and you said, hey, this guy's going to have five majors, you would be like, that's a lot. That guy hasn't won any PGA Tour events. Why all of a sudden would he win five majors? You know, so you just never know. I mean,
yeah, I think he gets two more, one or two more. I think Scott is going to get like eight more. So there's only so many more majors to go around at that point.
at 30 years old, you do the math, and let's just say he's competitive for the next 10 years. That's 40 opportunities, you know, for him to win a major. I mean, maybe you can squeeze a couple more years out of it, depending on how well he takes care of himself. You know, let's just call it 50 majors that he has a chance to win. I mean, that's for him to go in and win three or four or five more. I mean, that's a lot.
It's a hell of a percentage. That's a
big
clip.
Percentage, you know. So it's you know, you just never know when somebody gets on a run there. I mean, that's why there's only been a handful of guys that have won six or more. I mean, we're talking less than. I mean, how many do we have? We've got that have won they six have, or four majors. I mean, Jack Tiger.
That's elite company.
Jack Tiger, Gary, Ben Hogan, Nick Faldo.
I'm pulling the list up right now.
And then you've got...
you got Jack Tiger, Walter Hagen.
Hagen.
Hogan, Player, Watson. Harry Vardon.
Yeah, we're going way back.
Bobby Jones, Gene Sarazen, Sam Snead, Arnold Palmer. Those all have seven or more. And then you can add 11. Trevino, Faldo, Mickelson to six or more.
So 14 players. And of those 14 players, I think you only said, you know, seven, only half of those players in the last 70 years. You know, the other seven guys that are up there. Like,
that's a good point.
That's 100 years.
That's a good point.
So, I mean, to get to that six, getting to six majors is elite, elite company. Like,
yeah.
And we've only got one player that can do that right now, and that's Brooks. He's the only one with five that's active. Rory with four.
Yeah. I think had Xander not have been there so often previously, it would be a little bit of a different argument. You know, say, hey, he got one, maybe he gets one or two more. I think for him, this is the confidence boost that he needed, and I think he's going to rattle off a couple over the next 5 years. If he won one, six out of the next 10 years, I don't think anyone would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think
not six, but like if he won one over the next 10 years, if he won three of them over the next 10 years, I don't think that's an outlandish statement at all to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd be very surprised if this was his only one, but I think I'd be more surprised if he gets to five, you know?
Yeah.
He might not get to five. I think he gets to four. I truly, because in the way I look at this, so he's 30. So we know he's going to lose a little bit of speed over the next few years, but he's still going to be one of the longer hitters out there. I mean, what, he come from 185, goes down to 178, you know, as he gets into his late 30s.
You can still win majors doing that.
All day. Colin Morikawa's never seen 178.
He's got two.
Yep.
I agree.
Okay. What else? Bryson.
Look, I'm glad you went there because I gotta be honest about something. He changed me entirely, and it was nothing that he did on the golf course. Never really liked the guy. Never been a big fan of him, even though I will admit that I've always found him somewhat intriguing to watch. But when he threw that golf ball to that kid, and the guy sniped it from him and tried to run off, and Bryson called him out and made him come back and hand it to the kid, I was like, wait a second. There's a guy in there that I can support and that I like. That was the best moment I think he had of the entire week. And I am proud to say that I am a Bryson fan based off of what he did right there. He approaches the game differently, and I think that's one of the reasons maybe I've always been a little bit standoffish on him. But that moment alone showed me that deep down he's someone that I can pull for. Because he didn't just throw it and just keep walking. He threw it, saw what happened, and made sure that the kid got the golf ball. As a father, if I'd have been standing there and that happened to my kid, I'd have sure been pissed. But the fact that Bryson brought him back and made him give it to the kid, I think made all the difference in the world. And like I said, Bryson gained a fan in me from doing that.
I agree with that. I thought that was pretty cool that he did that.
I definitely thought that was cool. And like I said, I've always found him intriguing to watch. I just didn't necessarily enjoy him as the way he approached the game. And that's on me. That's not saying that what he was doing was wrong. But I will say, I'm going to pull for the guy.
I've always thought he is interesting. Yeah. I like how he pushes the envelope with the equipment and the status quo. Like he just doesn't assume that what everyone's telling him is right. And I love that. I think that's how you grow as a person and you get better, is that you challenge the authority. You challenge someone that's better. I'm not saying you do stupid things and get arrested. Like, you know, drop through traffic stops. We'll get to that. But I do think that you have to challenge what the status quo is. You can't just assume that just because someone came before you and did it that way, that it's right. And I love that he's like, why do all my clubs need to be different lengths? I want them all the same length. That makes the swing easier for me. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's cool that he challenges it. I just think he's maybe a little socially awkward. And I think that's why he's a little misunderstood. And I think his jokes what he thinks or what he thinks is funny is maybe not funny to most. And I think it comes across the wrong way. So, I don't know. I've always, he's intriguing and he's interesting. So I do like to listen to him and watch him to see what he's doing. He does say some dumb stuff sometimes. And you're like, why did you say that?
I could be accused of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I find him just kind of like you, interesting and intriguing. He seems to have gotten this like rebirth, and the fans have like started to embrace him again. Now, granted, I still think he's a douche. Yeah, he did something nice. It was cool what he did for the kid, but I don't know. One nice thing doesn't outweigh 100 douchey things that he's done over the years.
You don't like DeChambeau?
No, he's a douchebag.
Bryson DeChambeau.
You know what the best part of Live is for him? Is that no one watches it. So people only see Bryson four times a year, and that's about as much as we can handle him. Because if we saw him 24 times a year, you're gonna get Bryson fatigued and be like, dude, go the fuck away. But he's been away because no one watches Liv or cares about Liv. And so people are like, oh, yeah, you know, he definitely brings more color to the game. He's not a robot. You know, he's very fascinating from that standpoint. But I think because he's on Liv and no one watches it and you only get to see him four times a year, no one has breast fatigue. But if he was on the PGA Tour and he's 24 times a year, you'd have fatigue.
Could be part of it. Yeah,
you may not be wrong about that. I have heard something I thought about because I originally did not like the guy at all. Really did not. But I did hear from some guys that work with Cobra that had a lot of firsthand knowledge of him. It was like, he's different, but he's actually a pretty cool guy to be around. And I trust the source of where that came from to know a guy, you know, outside the ropes. So, you know, that's always stuck in the back of my head, but I never liked what he did necessarily inside of the ropes or what he did in press conferences. I also think that he's gotten a little older and matured. I think he was humbled a little bit from all the backlash that he got from just being,
I could buy that,
you know, who he was a little bit. So I think he's humbled a little bit.
He's grown up a little bit. He's
grown up a little bit. He's matured a little bit. And I just think he's a little bit of a different person. And I will say, like I said, where he's at today, I'm a bigger fan than I've ever been. I'll never say that he's, you know, my number one by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, it's tough to say he's not exciting to watch because of how he approaches it. Obviously hits the ball hard. He's putting really good right now. His game looks pretty good. The fact that the thing that still baffles me is how in the world he's so good around the greens with a 7-iron as a
lap. That's crazy. That is crazy.
Especially out of the bunkers. Like, it doesn't even look comfortable, but he's good. I mean, he averaged 6th around the greens this week, which is impressive with a 31-inch lob wedge.
Can I read
31 it? Sorry, 31 degree.
I want to read a text that I got at someone in the back nine on Sunday. Please not DeChambeau with multiple explanation points. He can take his $125 million and shove it.
Who said that?
That was my mother. Who sent me that text?
That's awesome.
Respect.
That's great.
So, shout out, Mom. We think alike on Bryson. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely different, intriguing. You know, it's kind of one of the things I said when Liv started is that they took some of the villains, if you will, right? The polarizing figures, took a lot of the polarizing figures and left us with a lot of the boring figures. Characters of the game are on Liv. So yeah, you get to see him four times a year and that's why you can stomach him. But so, how about Victor? The ghost of Victor Hovland reappeared. Back with Joe Mayo, and boom, all of a sudden he's playing great golf again. It was wild.
I want to hear the story as to why they parted ways in the beginning. I know
there's something there.
Joe is a big personality, and there's something that they probably didn't agree on. And Victor's, believe it or not, like, he's pretty strong-willed. Like, when he, like, he's been a part of three or four rules infraction groups in the last 2 years. And he's always not on the side of the player. If you notice that, like, every time he's been in a group, he's like, nope, it didn't cross here. Nope, you don't get a drop there. Like, nope, that's wrong. It didn't cross there. Like, he's got a strong personality. Obviously, you can't be on the PGA Tour and be that successful if you don't. But I feel like he's almost like on the top tier of that. And I feel like, even though he seems so laid back and calm in his interviews, I feel like he's pretty strong-willed. And I'm wondering if there was a clash there, because those two guys could butt heads really quickly if they don't agree on something. And I feel like they had something that happened that they were both like, all right, screw you. We're splitting up. Even though he knew that Joe was helping him and it was better for him to stick with him, which it sounds like he had to go back to Joe with his tail between his legs and say, hey man, let's figure this out. I was playing good golf with you and then I got away from you and then I sucked again. So
that what he did? Did he go back to Joe?
Yeah, he went back to Joe. Yeah.
I didn't know he had done that. I'm glad he did. I mean,
immediately started playing better. Immediately.
He was talking about, I thought I heard a quote, and he was almost ready to like withdraw from the PGA. He was like, in last week from Wells Fargo, like he was so upset with his game. And then all of a sudden he just flips a switch. It's like wild. I mean, the guy was like the best player in the world in September.
Yeah.
And then he absolutely sucks. And then boom, like that, he's great again. It's like, what?
Well, that also just goes to show, too, like his game hasn't changed that much. It was just like kind of like what Butch Harmon did with Rory a couple weeks ago. Like, and I heard him comment on it. It's like he went to Rory and he told him everything that any other great, you know, coach would have told him. Hey, Rory, you've got a great driver swing. You hit your long irons and your driver great, but you can't swing your wedges like that. Let's find a way to make a three-quarter swing. And this is coming out of Butch Harmon's mouth. This isn't me like giving my opinion. Butch Harmon said, Rory, you swing your driver great, but you need to find a way to make more three-quarter swings with your wedges. And that's pretty much all he told him. Like, they didn't even go over any like swing mechanics, just like, hey, flight your wedges better and you're going to play better. And then he won two times in a row, one with Lowry and then at Quail Hollow. Like,
yeah,
I mean, and that's the same thing probably with Joe Mayo and Victor Hovland. Like, he's probably not telling him anything brand new, just reminding him of all the things that he does well, and then give him that confidence stepping on the first tee at a major. You already have all these things. Just think this way instead of thinking that way.
Well, that's what I've always said. What makes Butch so great? It's not necessarily, I mean, obviously God knows what he's doing, knows the swing, can coach you through all that. But I think he's just such a validified voice that
definitely validified.
When he speaks, his word is trusted. So when mm-hmm. Butch tells you you're good, you're like, if Butch says it, I've got it. You know, yeah. I mean, I think that's where he reinstills that confidence in so many players. And I always hated that Tiger got away from him because I just always viewed that as a mistake. Obviously, his playing career after that, it's hard to argue that. But on the backside, when you look at the swing changes that Hank Haney made and you look at, you know, what he did with, you know, some of his other instructors, Sean Poley, I agree with, I didn't like what he did with Sean Poley. Chris Como was probably the second best that I think that he had.
Yeah.
But Butch, to me, I mean, look at what he did with Ricky. He cleaned it up slightly and gave him the confidence to go out and play good golf. And I think that's what Butch does best. He gives confidence. His voice is probably the best one that anyone can have standing behind them on the range before they tee it up. Hey, hit this, hit that. That's exactly what you need to do. Go do that. Yeah. And people are like, hey, Butch said it. I'm about to go do that. And that's how you put a bunch of money in the
Midas touch.
Yeah.
You know, to that point, you know, if you look back, yeah, I know you talked about, you know, the different personalities that Tiger worked with. And I think that was a mistake on Tiger and Butch's part to kind of split ways, because I think it was an ego thing. The same thing, kind of what we were talking about with Joe Mayo and Victor Hovland. It was like, I don't need you. I'm good without you. And they both kind of said that. And they both had incredible careers. Tiger was great. Butch is going down as one of the greatest instructors of all time. But just imagine if they just could have swallowed their pride for the last 20 years and continue to work together and not gone down these, you know, rabbit hole of instruction, and trying these things that are just silly. But, you know, I do get where Tiger's like, I want to get better. I want to keep getting better. But at that point, though, like you are better. You are so much better. Like, then it's just a matter of like just maintaining. And I guess that's boring. It's not sexy to keep maintaining the same thing. But, you know, I think there was a cool comment to kind of all that wrapped around all of this, too. And you know, Tiger made some huge changes from in 1998, you know, with Butch. Obviously, you know, really kind of stuck in deep and across the line at the top and really got the club up in front of him and planed off at the top. It was obviously one of the most, I think to this day, probably considered
the best golf swings ever. Yeah.
One of the most beautiful golf swings ever. And a little unfair because the body type that he had is he was able to make a swing that just not very many people can make.
He was more athletic. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he had a 28 inch waist and super flexible, and he was able to keep his lower body so still and yada, yada, yada. I don't need to digress there, but, the one cool comment I heard Brad Faxon, you know, talk this week about, he was talking about Xander Schauffele and what he's done with Chris Como and, you know, working that club down the line, you know, Xander would get it up. He'd bow his left wrist, which he still does a little bit, but he would really kind of get it laid off at the top. And Chris was adamant that, hey, if we can get this club working down your target line a little better, your misses are going to be better with all of your clubs, especially your driver. And you're going to drive the ball better and further if we can get this club working down the target line a little bit more. And you can see him making these practice swings, and he's really working that club in the practice swings, obviously going beyond what he wants to do to try to accentuate or get that feeling. So he's really getting the club across the line in his practice swings. And you know, Brad Faxon said, Davis Love's dad, told him back in the day and said, if you can visibly see a change from a PGA Tour player, most likely it's too big of a change. Most of the time when you try to make a change from a PGA Tour player, you're already so good. The change that you're trying to make is so small and minuscule that to the average golfer, they can't even tell the difference. But he commented, he said, in this situation, which is rare, you can visibly see the change that Xander is working on, which is incredible because it's a big change. If a PGA Tour player makes a change, let alone one of the top five players in the world makes a change where you can see him swing and look at the top and be like, wow, that club is setting really nicely down the line. He used to get it really bowed and laid off at the top. Then that's a big change. And for him to be able to do that in the middle of all this and still play good golf, still keep finishing in the top five, top 10, and then go win a major. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, look back at Tiger, which we brought that up a second ago with Butch. It took him 2 years to really, I'd say a year and a half, for that thing, for that to really sink in. I think it started to sink in 99 at Madonna when he beat Sergio. That was a year and a half of working on this golf swing. And that's when it started to click. And then he went on that crazy run from 99 to 2002, where he won seven majors. You know, that's just insane, you know, from that time frame. But I don't know. It's kudos to Xander on that note as well, to be able to make those changes with Como, and they're pretty substantial for him to be able to do that in the competitive arena, like as of a major, and still be able to get it done. I mean, that's incredible.
Well, and I would argue that it's also very tough to make a change like that and see such a quick benefit, and especially to gain speed.
Yeah,
the way he has, because most of the time what they talk about, I mean, especially like you look at a Gankus, for example, you know, he talks about speed, being able to flick that wrist down there by having the club almost a little bit laid off. And he almost went the opposite way and gained speed. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of laying stuff off and the wrist and all that. It's just me personally. But when you take a player like that and you're able to see quick results, not only visually, but also from a performance standpoint, you know you've done something right. Like, he's in a really good position at top of the swing right now. And you can still see a little bit of, you know, the player that he used to be in that swing. The shape's still there. It's just not near as violent. It's very similar to what Butch did with Ricky. You know, Ricky's swing, it still had a lot of the same shape to it, but it was just much, much smaller. It was a much less amount of shape. There was way less laid off club head or club in general. And now it's just put in a better position, and he became more consistent and became a better player overall.
I think Como is moving his way up. I mean, I've listened to a bunch of his, you know, he's all over the internet too. So, you know, anybody can go in and pull up clips of Chris Como, but obviously he worked with Tiger Woods for a while, and that certainly definitely helps his pedigree. But I mean, he's a generalist in a sense that he's not teaching like a Sean Foley, where he had a set standard of the way he wanted to teach the golf swing. A lot of the guys swung the same way.
A system.
Yeah. And I don't think Como has that. Which I think is great. I think the best teachers, you know, kind of like Butch, they look at the player. Hey, what are your tendencies? What are the little idiosyncrasies that you have? And, you know, let's build on those. If that's something that's really hard for you to change. And Curtis Strange said this the best, you know, when I would talk to him about golf swing, when he was working with Ballard back in the day, and they were like, if you can't do it in one lesson, at least a couple of times, and do it well, then it's not that change isn't right for you. Like if a coach says, hey, try this, and you can say it takes you 20 minutes to kind of do it, but you can feel it, and then you can accomplish it quickly, and then it's just a matter of repetition, then it's okay. That's a good change. But if a teacher says, hey, you need to keep doing this and keeps topping it over and over for the next 3 weeks, and you're not able to get the ball airborne, then that's not the change that you need to make. And that's hard for some instructors, because they read a book or they look at a video and they get on V1 and like, oh, well, the lines tell me you should swing it this way. But that player, if they're a good player, you know, maybe you're elevated, you know, lower handicap or scratch player, if they can't pick it up in a lesson, at least hit a couple good shots with it, then you need to give them something different. Like, that's not going to work. I think that's what Butch does well. And I think that's what Como does well. He's like, let me find what you do really well, and the things that you're not married to in a sense in your golf swing. And if he comes to him and says, hey, I'd like to change this or this, what do you think you can change? And then we try it, and the player's like, I can change that. That doesn't bother me. But if you tell me I got to strengthen my grip, I can't do that. And for a PGA Tour player, if you tell a PGA Tour player that, they're like, I'm not messing with my grip, then don't mess with it. You know, you're not going to go to Dustin Johnson or Colin Morikawa and go say, hey man, can you stop bowing in at the top? Like, those guys are going to lose their card, you know, in a second. So there's a science to that for sure. And I think he's got it figured out. I think he's on the right path. And it wouldn't surprise me if you start seeing, I mean, this is certainly going to help his cause, but it wouldn't surprise me if you see a lot more guys start going to Como and be like, hey, you know, I need some help. I just need a little tweak. I don't need a revamp, you know.
Como's, I've listened to him speak a couple times. Actually, the first time I heard Como speak was right after it was announced that he, you know, he was a new guy on the scene when he started working with Tiger. Not many people knew about him. And he had just, it was about 2 or 3 months after, and I saw him speak, and he was awful. Like, yeah. Not good. Like, just not a good public speaker. You could tell he was super nervous. Everyone was focused. Okay, who is this guy that Tiger did as his coach? Like, I don't think he was, like, ready for the quote-unquote moment, if you will.
Yeah.
But then the next time I heard him speak, which was years later, was way better. Way better. He's now much more polished and is comfortable doing that kind of stuff. And, yeah, he's big into 3D and biomechanics and seeing how an individual's body moves. So I guarantee you he had Xander on some sort of system, seeing how his body is built, how his body moves, and how to maximize what Xander has for sure.
Yeah. And that's a product of, you know, the modern golf systems that we have and all the tools that we have to kind of make swing changes and analyze.
Have the data to back it up.
Yeah, you've got the data to back it up. And I think, you know, 30 years ago, you had, you had video. Like I can, you can get on, you know, your camera and draw lines and be like, hey, this player does this, this player does this. You need to do something close to this. And now, you know, with the 3D, the force plates, the TrackMan, and, you know, you've got so many tools at your disposal. And again, all those tools are there to paint a picture for the player so they can understand what you want them to do. You know, you can, you know, all these players can get, they can dive so deep in all this and get lost in all the numbers. But as the, it's the instructor's job to kind of paint the picture and to simplify things and say, hey, based on all of this information that we're seeing, I think you can work on these two things and get better really quickly. These are the two things that are really, you know, holding you back. And that's some teachers are really good at it, at ciphering through all the data and being a good, you know, it's one thing to know the X's and O's. It's another thing to articulate the plan for the player moving forward. Not everybody can do that. You know, it's like coaching football. Like there's some guys that are great X's and O's, but they're not good at motivating and vice versa. And there's very few that can do all those. And that's why they have so many, that's why you have so many coaches in the NFL. You know, you look at like a Bill Belichick, he's a defensive minded guy and he's got an offensive coordinator that, that calls plays. Like it's not his thing. So, you know, being a golf coach or a golf instructor is the same way. I mean, sometimes you got to sub it out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've even with some of my students, you know, I'm like, hey, I want you to go see this person. Can you go see this person? And cause they're really good at this and let's see what we can come up with. And I think that's, if you're really invested in the player, like I said, we're talking Como and Butch Harmon. These guys are going to, they're, if you want the player to really latch on and build that relationship, then you're going to say, hey, I'm your guy. I'm going to facilitate this. I'm going to help you with what, everything I can. And then if there's something that we're not sold on, I'm going to set it up, go see whoever it is. You know, if it's a putting guy, like, hey, I mean, I like you doing this with your putting, but David Orr is really good with putting and he's really good with this, this, and this. Let's go see him. You know, that's a good golf coach in my opinion.
Did I ever tell you guys a story of what Harmon said? I sat down, I was at the fireside chat, if you will, with the Harmon family.
Mm-hmm.
And so their dad was kind of the patriarch and set the standard and manner. And then it's Butch and Craig and Billy are the three brothers who are all great golf professionals all retired now. And then there was Claude Harmon III. So it was the four of them kind of just talking about their family and golf and history. And forget who the moderator was, but asked like, all right, so when you go to heaven and you see your dad, what's the first thing he's going to say to you? And Butch goes, oh, I know. He's going to ask me, how the hell did you fuck it up with Tiger Woods?
Yeah, as it should be.
I love that Butch said that.
As it should be.
That's great.
So any other players caught your eye or noteworthy? Colin, JT, actually I just realized this looking preparing for the show. He led the strokes gained tee to green this week.
Yeah.
That's good. That's
finished T8.
Good for him to drive the ball a little better. The putting still was a little shaky, but
yeah, putting was bad. That's what held them back. Rahm misses the cut, sucks. Rory just doesn't really have it. Made some little bit of fireworks here and there when there's no pressure on Sunday.
On that note, Rahm, I think, you know, I do. I think Rahm is 100% completely regretting going to the LIV Tour. I think I don't think the money is as big of a deal to him. I think he likes being in the middle of things. I think he likes the action. And not only that, now he knows that there's a chance that the LIV Tour will never get world ranking points, or at least for the foreseeable future. And he may lose opportunity to play in these majors and be relevant. And I think that's why you saw him tomahawk clubs in a major. Like that's a stress move. Like you don't do that unless you're stressed, and he is stressed because he's trying. He needs to win. He doesn't want to win. He needs to win. He needs to finish well in these majors, and that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. He feels like if he doesn't win, he's going to become irrelevant. And I think he's feeling it the most of all the players.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And he can fry at the bank the rest of his life, frolic.
Yeah, I know. And I that's fair. I mean, I agree with you, but I just, you know, just that's an observation. I just feel like I can see it. Like the stress level is high for him. And he's like, wait a second. I know I'm in the Masters forever. I'm not in the PGA forever. You know, there's some of these majors that I'm not going to play forever and I need to play well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing we touched on it, but I want to get back to it. So Justin Thomas went back to his old driver shaft and got out of the graphite design, went back to that Mitsubishi and the Diamante ZF. And he also shortened it a hair.
Mm. Yeah. So he had added length to it, right?
He was at 45 3/4. And I think he backs down at like 45 now. So it obviously works better for him at that length. You know, length varies by player of what you can do well with and what you can remain accurate while still creating a reasonable amount of distance with. So for him, it obviously made a big switch. Obviously, we all know how I feel. And, you know, I want to see him continue to play better and get back in the mix with some of these guys. It was good to see him have a good week. I mean, on Sunday, I put money on him to get into the top five. He just missed it, but regardless, to see him compete in the major again, especially with the amount of pressure that he had playing in front of the hometown crowd. Yeah, it was good to see him at least, you know, be inside the top 10 and put together a performance you can be proud of. You know, he should have walked off of that course being like, all right, I contended. Because I consider top 10 contending. He might not have been in that last group. We didn't necessarily watch him contend for the league. But if you're in the top 10 of a major, you're in contention. I would feel very comfortable saying that. I think you guys would both agree with that for the most part. Mike, you can shake your head all you fucking want to.
I mean, depending on the course, but yeah, this course, I think, you know, anything could happen here at Valhalla.
Absolutely. Now, do we want to talk about? Are we going to talk about Scheffler? Or you want to talk about golf course first? Like, what do we want to?
All right, let's go golf course first.
Okay.
Let's make this a rollback discussion.
I loved it. I mean, without going too deep down that, I think they're all four majors have their claim to fame. Obviously, Augusta is played in the same golf course, the only major that is played on the same golf course every year. So that is one of the most famous because of that. And we've all talked about the reasons why playing the same venue adds to the history. I think the British Open has their thing. You've got your seaside landscape, your Lynx golf, and it's the home of golf. And the U.S. Open is known for being extremely tough, almost too tough sometimes. And I think the PGA is kind of settled in. We want drama, and we like to see it in the disguise of birdies and bogeys and eagles and doubles, you know. And I think, and it's going to be typically lower scoring. And they play really nice golf courses that are well known throughout the U.S. And I don't know. I think they've found their niche. I think it's great. I thought this week was super entertaining. There's so many people in the mix, and it was attributed to the course setup. This Valhalla, you can set that golf course up as hard as you want. They could have played it from the tips. They could have narrowed the fairways. They, outside of ball rollback, none of that. Like the ball that they have, they could have set this golf course up and had single digit winner if they wanted to. They could have easily done that. But they chose to do it, set it up in a way that led to more birdies, more bogeys. Maybe not as many bogeys or doubles, but more birdies and more opportunities to create some drama and some fireworks. And I thought it was great. I was cool with that. I thought it was really entertaining. I'd love to see the numbers on Sunday for spectators, but I think it was probably pretty good.
I think the golf course should have been set up harder. I know that they can do it there. I think the fairways were a little bit too forgiving. I don't think the rough was as penalizing in some parts. There were certainly parts where it was penalizing, but that was kind of my one like miss in my regard. I just think that have the same length everywhere. There were spots where it was way thicker than other spots. And I don't think that should necessarily be the case. You know, let's make it thick everywhere. Let's penalize these guys a little bit more. Let's not make these fairways quite as wide. Because I do think it's a good venue. I don't want to take that away. But I don't think 21 under needs to be what guys are doing or guys are shooting to win in a major championship. You have two guys over 20 under par. I think that this golf course could have been set up a little bit harder, and I think it should have been. I don't think it's necessarily a discussion of the ball going too far as much as it is a discussion of let's make it a little bit more difficult. I just don't think they set the golf course up to find, I don't want to say bad. I'm not trying to take anything away from the guys that played well. I just think that the golf course could have been set up a little bit more difficult. And I'm not trying to say that it's a bad venue. I just think that they went a little soft on setup.
I didn't like the golf course. I think, and taking the, I mean, when you get soft conditions, they had a bunch of rain, golf course was soft, no wind. These guys are going to eat it alive. I don't really care where you put them. But that being said, I just thought it was kind of boring. I thought the golf course was boring because there was no variety in the shots. Half the holes looked the same. Everyone was playing the same strategy. Everyone had the same clubs off the tees. Those greens were so flat. There wasn't an interesting putt I watched all week. There wasn't an interesting chip. I thought the green complexes were too boring. It was almost too easy. These guys were getting up and down from everywhere. There just wasn't the volatility of, like, nobody was making bogeys. Nobody. I mean, it was the easiest course in the PGA Championship history by 250 strokes. I just thought it was kind of lame.
Yeah, I don't disagree with your synopsis there, Mike. I'll be honest with you. I just think it comes down more to course setup than it does to the quality of the golf course. You're exactly right. They didn't have the toughest pin placements.
I don't think they have tough pin placements on those greens. They were so flat. Like,
you can. I've been there.
Other than tucking them right behind a bunker.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to go that far, but I think it could have definitely been tougher than the way they set it up. Regardless, you know, we saw what we saw. I don't think guys should be shooting those numbers in a major championship. I think that the golf course should have been set up a little bit more difficult. And I'll leave it there.
Yeah, Now, we got drama. We got a good leaderboard, but they're not mutually exclusive. Like, you can have a shitty venue, but still get good drama. It just seemed like a PGA Tour event, like a regular PGA Tour event.
You had some good names up there.
Yeah, there were great names up there. It was an awesome leaderboard.
The cream rise to the top. I mean, this was more entertaining than watching the final round at Augusta. I mean, that was sure. Extremely boring. That was, I could have done something else that day, anything else.
But you see way more interesting shots at Augusta. There really wasn't any interesting shots. Like, these guys missed the greens and they're chipping off perfect Zoysia grass, which I don't even think professionals should play on Zoysia. It's too easy.
I don't like Zoysia either. I will say I don't like
Zoysia. I think it's too easy for them.
But Augusta every shot seems interesting because there's so much history on every single hole. So it's almost like it's not quite fair to compare the two. I mean, we've played three majors at Valhalla and one Ryder Cup, whereas we play at Augusta every single year. So you've got a history there. You've seen so many shots on every single hole. So you can create this aura around the holes that are pretty plain out there just because you've seen them. But
it was never like, oh man, this guy missed the green here. I got to see this one. Cause they were all just freaking easy little pitches because the greens were so flat. Like, guys were getting up and down for like crazy.
It's different. I mean, it's different than every other major that we watch. So, I mean, that just means that you don't like seeing guys go low is basically what you're saying. You don't like.
No, I'm okay with guys going low, but I would like some kind of volatility in the holes. It just became like, even the hazards were in, like, there's water nearby, but none of it doesn't really come into play all that often. You know, you got like bunkers that are like 20 yards into the rough. Like, so the only way you're going to hit it in that bunk, you fly it in there. Like, I don't know. Like, I just thought it was boring.
Well, it was up 10%. The viewership was up 10% from last year's.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with the golf course, though.
It has to do with Scotty getting arrested.
Well, no, the Sunday round didn't have anything. But, you know, Friday's round did have an increase, a big increase with him getting arrested. But Sunday's round had a 10% increase from last year's.
Yeah, you had a good leaderboard, a good bunch board.
Well, I think there's also people are tuning in to see what Scotty's going to do. I mean, I think that storyline was there. And, you know, he got himself just a little bit too far back after Saturday's round. But he was still within, you know, if he goes out and does something crazy, he was still could get close. And I think people wanted to see that. Now, mind you, the guys at top, they keep going low. You can't, he wasn't close enough to supersede that. But on the backside of it, Scotty has created a little bit of a storyline. And I hope it doesn't end this week since he didn't win.
So we want to get to Scotty. So what we don't need to explain the situation. It was national news. It was everywhere. What did you guys make of it? It goes down for me as one of those moments that I don't think I'll ever forget where I was. Like when I was pumping my gas at 6:45 or something in the morning at Wawa, leaning up against my car, flipping on Twitter while I'm waiting for the pump to fill up, tank to fill up. And I kind of almost scrolled past it. Jeff Darlington's tweet saying world number one golfer Scotty Scheffler was just arrested. And I was like, wait a minute. What did I just read? I was like, that's fucking fake. That's not real. Like someone hacked his account. Like this isn't real. And it was, I was fucking shocked at what was going on.
So I got up and I didn't look at my phone immediately. You know, we got to get the kids out of the house and everything. And I remember I went to go get ready. And I won't tell you exactly what I did, but you guys can imagine. I sat down and looked at my phone. And I remember just kind of like my phone was lit up. And I'm just kind of scrolling for a second. I'm like, there's no way. There is no way. Next thing you know, you scroll another headline. Next thing you scroll another headline, another headline. I'm like, this cannot be real. This cannot be real. And then come to find out, obviously it was. But immediately, I already knew kind of what had happened. And I got to go back and say this. I'm pro law enforcement, not going against anything, but this guy was obviously on some sort of power trip. But here's the biggest fault of the entire situation. The guy tried to stop a car with his hand and held on.
Yeah,
but that's your own fault. That is your own fault.
You can't charge a guy for you know trying to run over a police officer when you grab him on the side and then grab the car on the side as he's passing you. Grab the handle of a driver's side
and door. Then hold on. Did you think you were going to stop it? Like
yeah, what are you doing?
What were you thinking? And then to look at the charges. I'm like, oh, this guy was just pissed off and just trying to throw everything at him. Third degree criminal mischief? Really? Really?
Second degree, Virginia, second degree assault of a police officer is not a felony, but in Kentucky it is.
Yeah, I was like what,
holy hell. What?
Like, are you kidding right now? No, you tried stopping a car with your hand, which does not work. Ask anyone. You're out of your mind. Absolutely out of your mind. And the best part, is that if it was anyone else, you'd have been like, maybe I could see that. Everyone. Nobody was like, yeah, that's Scotty. No, everyone was like, no, sorry, not him. Not
they the immediately thought the cop was in the wrong. Everyone was like,
everyone was the entire world.
Every single one. To the point that the governor of Kentucky has to come out and make a statement on this. And on the backside of that, all of a sudden you're telling me body cam footage doesn't exist. Are we serious right now? All of a sudden, body cam doesn't exist on this? Dude, how? Like, how? How is that possible? Like, get out of here. I don't believe any of it. It makes no sense at all. So,
right long click, story short. Delete, empty, recycle.
Yes.
That's how.
Yeah. And the governor's like, unfortunately, we just don't have body cam footage of this. Yeah, I call bullshit there. I call absolute bullshit there. But regardless, the charges are going to be dropped. Scotty's lawyer came out in the most casual way possible, like, yeah, don't worry. We've got this. We've got it handled. There's already news coming out that the charges are going to be dropped. His reputation, well, that was the thing. It was like,
it doesn't sound like they are, not immediately. His lawyer came out and said they're not going to be dropped, and they pushed the arraignment back. So we'll see. But there'll be some sort of little plea, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so. It was a mess. I mean, again, Mike, when I woke up that morning, I realized that we didn't put our picks in for our pool. So I was super irritated about that. And then I saw that Scotty went to jail, and I was like, what is going on right now? I was just had a flood of emotions. I was like, I was fuming that the picks didn't go in, because the website that we're on this golf pool with a friend of ours, and it is by far the worst golf website I've ever used.
Yeah.
Rarely loads properly. You can't see what's going on.
You can't search, figure out what the hell. You
can't search anything. It's awful. It's the worst. Paris, I know you don't listen to our podcast, but if you are, you need to change your website next year, because this thing is terrible. But anyway, the picks that we made apparently didn't load. We're not in. And then I see that Scotty's in jail. I'm like, what's going on? I had him picked in a couple other pools. And I'm like, if he doesn't show up, I was like, I was fuming. I was like, if this guy doesn't make it to his tee time, the PGA Tour is never going to Valhalla again. And honestly, I still don't think they ever go back. I think it's done. I think with all the hoopla, and again, I'm making fun of the Scotty thing, but somebody did lose their life. Is terrible and
extremely tragic.
It really is. I mean, you've got a pedestrian that I don't really know the details. I really haven't heard the details of what happened and how the bus driver hit this person. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that somebody did lose their life, and that was the cause of this chaos. And I don't think they're going back there. I think it's done. I think they've had three tournaments there. They've had a Ryder Cup, and I think with all the chaos and the just lack of organization, just too many people not knowing what was going on and where to be, what to do. If they do go back, it's going to be an extended period where, you know, it's instead of the 10-year cycle, which typically seems to be what they do here for the majors. I think it's going to be extended a little longer. I think they're going to think twice about going back there. And
I think this was a last ditch, because the PGA used to own Valhalla, and I'm willing to bet when they sold it, it was part of the deal. We'll give you one more PGA and then we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. PGA did used to own it. They're no longer, and I would bet money that was as a part of the deal. It's a big money-making opportunity for them, I mean, they made millions of dollars in the merchandise tent alone. So not to, you know, count in drinks, food, everything else that they have an opportunity to make money off of. But regardless, I totally agree. This is not going to be another major championship venue unless they come in and they make some big changes. And it's not that they're outside of the conversation. It's just whether or not they're going to make the changes necessary in order to allow it to continue to be a major championship venue. So,
but going back to Scotty, the whole thing, when the picture came out of him and the mugshot and the orange jumpsuit, like, are you kidding me? And then did you see the interview? He was watching himself on Get Up through the jail cell and realized that the PGA was, that he still had time to potentially get out and make his tee time. So he started doing his stretching routine in the jail cell. I'm like, this isn't real life, is this? Like, what is going on here?
That's awesome.
It was.
And he shot 5 under. He went out and shot 5 under.
Yeah, I don't think it had totally hit him yet, because I think he just was in such a rush. He went out to the course. And I think the next day, Saturday, was a tougher day for him. Because there's just so much he had to deal with, so many questions. I mean, you can only imagine all the ribbing he got on the range from it. But I don't think anyone thought it was real or that he was at fault. And I think that's why guys had a little bit of fun with it. You know, again, not trying to take away from the tragedy that happened there with a spectator that lost his life. That's absolutely horrific. And I my prayers and thoughts go out to, you know, his family, obviously. But on the backside of it, you know, there were some players that got some good ribs in from him. Outside of that day, he shot 67, 66, 65. He played good outside of that. But at some point, you know, you got to be disturbed just a little bit. I mean, it's a lot to have to deal with. It's a lot of media covering stuff that he doesn't want to cover, covering stuff that he's like, this is ridiculous. Mind you, it was dark. The guy, I can only imagine, like the way I picture it. And again, I wasn't there. I don't know. And the guy's trying to guide him with a flashlight, right? Like he's trying to bring a plane in. And Scotty misinterprets it slightly, goes over. And some guy decides, I'm going to stop this car with my hand. What an idiot. Like, what an idiot. Like, come on, man. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And then all of a sudden, he decides to throw every charge at him. The cops, obviously, they were obviously at high alert with everything that just happened. But then to have that, you just saw the way to, he's going to jail today. Also, I was like, wait a second here. Wait a second. Do y'all know what happened?
What's going on?
Did you see it? Like, Does anyone talk to the guy like, hey, man, if a car is passing you, you know you can't stop it by grabbing the door handle? I don't know if that ever crossed your mind, but like maybe we need to look back at our safety protocols here and what we're doing and understand what our abilities are as a human being versus a couple ton vehicle moving at any rate of speed.
It didn't help Scotty either on Saturday that he didn't have Ted Scott there. You know, Ted was, prearranged. It was his daughter was graduating and went back Friday night for the graduation Saturday and came back. But so he didn't have him to lean on or say the right things to him to kind of keep him a little focused. But yeah, I think he was running on pure adrenaline, not knowing what the hell was going on Friday. And then reality might have sunk in like, oh, I actually have like, I got to like deal with this. Like, yeah, it was just a wild, wild. Now it didn't, I don't think by any means did it. He lost by what, 8 shots, you know? So it wasn't like it kept him from winning the tournament.
Yeah.
If he had lost by like 3 or 4, then you might say like, yeah. Ooh, you know, he lost by 8. So it wasn't like,
yeah,
but he shot 2 over on Saturday. He could have easily shot 65 on Saturday. And if he's in contention on Sunday, that 65 could have been 63 or 62. Like I have a hard time saying that it didn't affect his chances of winning the golf tournament, because I think ultimately this absolutely affected that. And we don't know what that 66 could have been like. We don't know what.
True. Yeah, I guess so.
Could have been affected there. I mean, my God.
I just don't want to take it away from Xander. And say,
I don't want to take anything away from Xander. Taking nothing away from Xander. Xander won this golf tournament. It's his tournament, his trophy. He has it for the next year. 100% respect to Xander. What we didn't touch on is, how about the guy's first hole? I'm out for a week. My kid has a baby. I'm a hole it out on one. Boys, I'm still here. That was absurd. Absurd.
I almost was like, I'll just end it right now. Just give him the trophy. And we'll just, yeah, wild. One last thing before our picks. My new favorite man in golf, Johnson Wagner. if our listeners haven't been watching the Golf Channel at night during these big events and they have live Johnson on site, you just got to do it. He's out there recreating things. He's getting in the woods. He's hitting shots. You know, it all started at the Players when he was throwing balls up against that bank to see how Rory's ball would have bounced if it was above the line or below the line. And then it just has gotten out of control from there, and I'm here for it. I love it. And then the weekend, the poor guy basically doesn't play on tour anymore because he has the chipping yips, and they're having him hit like a 40-yard pitch shot out of the fairway. He chunks one. Bones one, chunks another one. And they put him out there in the rough, and he toe shanks one, heel shanks one. I was like, this poor guy on live television. Brandel's giggling. It was awesome television. Kudos for him for doing it and going back out there and being a good sport.
Like a champ. He was a good sport about it.
Great sport about it.
Yeah.
It's cool little feature.
I'll say this. I was fortunate enough a couple years ago when I was in Charlotte, I got to walk the course with Johnson randomly for the United States Mid-Amateur Championship that a guy I used to work with, Kevin O'Connell, ended up winning. But the final round, I had to walk with him and Andrew Shupp, and I stopped to introduce me to our, I need to take the trash out. Scotty Scheffler, or Scotty Scheffler, Jesus.
Johnson.
No, Andrew Shupp was the pro at Charlotte Country Club at the time. Was nice enough to introduce me to these guys. I walked up, talked to him. He introduced me to these guys. He was like, yeah, you should hang out with these guys. They're a good time. And Johnson Wagner was one of them. So I ended up walking basically 36 holes with Johnson Wagner. And I have been such a big fan of his since then. He's he is as cool as the other side of the pillow, a guy that you'd love to hang out with and grab a beer with. I mean, just one of those guys. I'll never forget the quick little rabbit hole, but we go into the locker room at Charlotte Country Club, and this was in between rounds. And he obviously knows the locker room attendants there and everything, and they're giving him crap. Like, these guys, these amateurs, they aren't peeling. You know, we're getting nothing. I'm like, what? They're not tipping? He just grabbed 100 and gave it to the guy immediately. And I was just like, good on you, buddy. Good on you. I don't have it like that. Like, I'm gonna give him 40% on the drink that I get. That's my tax bracket. But I got to walk 36 holes with the guy. I mean, he treated me like I was just someone else, and I would hang out with that guy every night. Like, the guy is an absolute blast to be around, really good dude. And then all of a sudden he started doing this stuff, and you know, he re-embraced the mustache, got the mustache back. He embraces that. I think he gives really good analysts of everything. Like, he's really good. He's been there. He knows what he's talking about. Really good relationship with all the players. I absolutely love hearing his point of view on things.
Yeah, he's awesome. It's good stuff. Good stuff. Keep it up, Johnson. All right. We want to get to our picks.
Yeah.
Scotty in the field this week off of work release. And
off of work release.
We got Jordan, Morikawa, Finau, Sorek Colonial. It's called the Charles Schwab Challenge. It's weird to call a tournament a challenge. I don't know. It just doesn't sound right.
Yeah. It's either tournament or invitational or
open or even open, give me like classic or I don't know, something just challenge. Yeah. Just
I agree.
So, J1, you want to go first?
Sure. I'll be honest. I pulled up the PGA Tour power rankings this week.
I'm concerned.
Just skimming through there just to see what was going on. So I've got some names. Didn't use all the names there, but I did snag a few. But anyway, like normal, I'll start from the bottom. $7,500. Austin Eckeroat has made 11 of 13 cuts. He's played some good golf. And then jumping up, $7,700. Mr. Mark Hubbard played well for a little bit last week. Had some flashes. Ended up finishing 26th with kind of a poor Saturday finish, but still a good finish for Mark. Played a little bit of golf with Mark in the past, and good dude, pretty laid back guy, and cool to see him playing so well. 13 of 13 cuts this year. Then jumping up to Thomas Dietrich, 8 of 12 cuts this year, finished fourth last week. I played some great golf, so hopefully he's trending in the right direction. 8,700, Denny McCarthy, 11 of 13 cuts this year. Didn't play well last week, but prior to has been playing some really good golf this year for him. So I shouldn't say for him. He's been playing good golf. We all know how great of a putter he is, and when he drives the ball well and does a good job with his irons, he competes and he's in contention. So hopefully he can play four rounds and make some birdies. And then I move up to Billy Horschel, $8,800. This is kind of a flyer here. Obviously he won the off event there about a month ago at the Punta Cana Championship, and then finished eighth this past week. So I mean, Billy's he's a veteran. I mean, the guy can play. You never know when he's going to turn it on, and obviously played well last week. So it seems as though he's played some really good golf, winning event, eighth place finish in a major last week, seventh place at the Houston Open, 12th at the Valspar, and he's had one poor finish there. at the Valero, but overall played some better golf. So hopefully he's moving in the right direction. And then Harris English at 9,000 played some really solid golf. No real super high finishes, but just solid golf, making a bunch of birdies, which in this game we all know is important. So there you go. No, a lot of mid-range guys there. No top tier guys, which hopefully I won't regret. But if I can get all six of these guys and make the cut, make a bunch of birdies, then we'll be in good shape.
Sounds good. All right, McClay.
All right, I'm going with Mr. Lee Hodges at 7,200. Bob McIntyre, 7,000. Ricky Fowler, 7,600. Thomas Dietrich, 8,000. Adam Scott, 9,200. And Jordan Spieth at 10,600.
Wow. Mm. Spieth.
Jordan.
Huh? You got to like him there.
All right. So I like $6,300. Andrew Novak is a huge steal at $6,300. He's been playing some great golf, and I just love him at that price. Then I go up $7,500, Austin Eckroat. Jay has picked him as well. Just kind of, I think he's underrated, in all honesty. He's going to win. Has he already won? I think he's won. Yeah, he's won once. But he's going to start making a bigger name for himself, and I like him this week. Then I go up to 7,800, Aaron Rye. Is it Aaron Rye? Right?
Yeah.
Aaron Rye. I think his game fits perfect. Hits the golf ball straight off a tee. Is a really good short and mid-iron player. Not a great putter, but this is a ball-striking kind of golf course here, Colonial. Then I go up to another kind of short and steady guy who can putt his ass off, 8,900, Christian Bezuidenhout. I think this is a perfect golf course for him. Then I go up to 9,000, Harris English. Playing well, ball striker, just like Jay said. I'm going to cap it off with $10,400. Maximus Homa.
Mm.
Again, good just pick. Pure ball striker. And, you know, he's frustrated. I don't know if you guys saw his post. He said he was upset with how he played and lost to a guy that was literally in jail Friday morning.
That was great. I mean, if anybody else had said that, it would have come across the wrong way. But coming from Max, then it's super funny.
So
yeah,
there you go. I all kinds of variations of my team. I changed it four or five times. So we'll see. Like last week, I picked Morikawa cast, and by the time the tournament started, I had talked myself into Air Pools taking out Colin Morikawa, putting in Ludvig Åberg instead, and Morikawa almost wins the thing. Åberg misses the cut. So that's just a great fucking call by me there. Just awesome. One last before we sign off. Harry Higgs. Did you guys see Harry Higgs, what he did on the Corn Ferry Tour?
No.
No.
I heard you talk about it, but I did not see it.
He's lost his card. I think he might have like kind of conditional status on tour. And he's a lot of Ferry events. On the 18th hole, 72nd hole, he had to hole out from 83 yards to force a playoff and hold out from 83 yards to force a playoff and then wins in the playoff. So just pretty fucking awesome. That's insane, in all honesty.
That's insane.
The ball landed perfectly. I guess he said he had a bad lie and he was just trying to hit this big old, like, just hack it out, get it on the green running and see what happens. And it landed perfectly, rolled. And it rolled in like you were kind of just one hand and tapping in a 6-inch putt. It was just spot on perfect. Great club throw, high five with the caddy. Love a good golf celebration. So yeah, tip of the cap there. Hopefully that gets him back on tour. He's a colorful character.
Yeah, like he is.
We feel that. So all right. Yeah. That'll do. Unless you guys get anything else.
That'll wrap it up. Right. Good one. Good pod.
Appreciate it. Thanks to all of our listeners, as always. And we'll be back next week. Cheers.